I went into the apartment. It was small, worn, and shabby, but it was clean. A miniature jungle of very healthy green plants covered most of the far wall, framing the two windows. From the door, I could see a tiny television on a TV stand, an old stereo, and a futon. The dead woman lay on the futon. She had her hands folded over her stomach. I didn't have the experience to tell exactly how long she'd been there, but the corpse had lost all its color and its stomach looked slightly distended, so I guess that she died at least the day before. It was hard to guess at her age, but she couldn't have been much more than 30. She wore a pink terry cloth bathrobe, a pair of glasses, and had her brown hair pulled up into a bun. On the coffee table, in front of the futon, there was a prescription bottle, its top off, empty. A decanter of golden brown liquid, dusted for prints and covered by a layer of plastic, sat beside it, as did a tumbler that was empty but for a quarter inch of water still in its bottom, enough for a melted ice cube or two. Next to the tumbler, there was a handwritten note, also inside a plastic bag, along with a gel-tip pen. I looked at the woman. Then I went over to the futon and read the note. "I'm so tired of being afraid. There's nothing left. Forgive me, Janine." I shuddered. I'd seen corpses before, don't get me wrong. In fact, I'd seen crime scenes that looked like photos of Hell's slaughterhouse. I'd smelled worse, too, believe you me. An eviscerated body puts off a stench of death and rot so vile that it is almost a solid object. By comparison to some of my previous cases, this one was quite peaceful, well-organized, tidy, even. It looked nothing like the home of a dead woman. Maybe that's what made it feel so creepy. Except for Janine's corpse, the apartment looked like its owners had just stepped out for a bite to eat. I prowled around, careful not to touch anything. The bathroom and one of the bedrooms were like the living room, neat, a little sparse, not rich, but obviously well cared for. I hit the kitchen next. Dishes were soaking in now cold water in the sink. In the fridge, chicken was marinating in some kind of sauce, its glass bowl covered with Saran. I heard a quiet step behind me and said, "Suicides don't usually leave a meal marinating, do they? Or dishes soaking to be cleaned? Or their glasses on?" Murphy made a noncommittal noise in her throat. "No pictures up anywhere," I mused. "No family portraits, graduation shots, pictures of everyone at Disneyland?" I added up some other things as I turned toward the second bedroom. "No hair in the sink or bathroom trash can. No computers." I opened the door to the master bedroom and closed my eyes, reaching out with my senses to get a feel of the room. I found what I expected. "She was a practitioner," I said quietly. Janine had set up her temple on a low wooden table against the east wall. As I drew near it, there was a sense of gentle energy, like heat coming up from a fire that had burned down to mostly ashes. The energy around the table had never been strong, and it was fading, and had been since the woman's death. Within another sunrise, it would be completely gone. There were a number of items on the table, carefully arranged: a bell, a thick leather-bound book, probably a journal. There was also an old pewter chalice, very plain but free of tarnish, and a slender little mahogany wand with a crystal bound to its end with copper wire.